Hello, wonderful people. Welcome back. My guests today are none other than Johnny and Youssef from propanefitness.com, and it is another Life Hacks episode. If you are new here, you may not have heard one of these yet. We did the last one in October, but this is maybe the 15th episode we've done on Life Hacks. Basically, we go through our favorite tools, tips, and tactics for a productive and efficient life. Everything from apps to strategies, books, ways to make a toasted sandwich, and everything in between. And then we discuss them for a little bit, and everything that we talk about is linked in the show notes below so that you can go and buy it or check it out for yourself or just remember it later on. So today, expect to learn why I brought a potato to a podcast, my biggest productivity tip for 2021, how Johnny is generating ideas in the shower, Youssef's favorite journaling app, how to ensure you never miss your creatine again, and much more. All right, quick maths. The less that your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have, the more money that you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce the costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you are improving efficiency by bringing all your business processes into one platform. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the maths and see how you will profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/modern right now. That's netsuite.com/modern. This episode is brought to you by Crafted London. Finding men's jewelry that doesn't suck is very difficult, and Crafted London have nailed it. They are the number one men's jewelry company worldwide. They're sweatproof, waterproof, heatproof, and gymproof. They've got custom designs in gold and silver, necklaces, chains, pendants, bracelets, rings, and earrings. If you've seen me on any of the big cinema episodes on YouTube wearing a necklace, it will always be from Crafted. I absolutely love it. It works with formal wear, casual wear, whether it's daytime or nighttime. All of their pieces are super high quality. The designs are great, and I love them. It's all I wear. Also, they have an unlimited lifetime guarantee, so if your piece breaks for any reason at any point during the entire life of the product, they will give you a new one for free. Get a 15% discount site-wide on everything by going to bit.ly/cdwisdom and using the code MW15 at checkout. That's bit.ly/letter C letter D wisdom and MW15 at checkout. This episode is brought to you by Whoop. I've worn Whoop for over 4 years now, since way before they were a partner on the show, and it is the only wearable I have ever stuck with because it's the best. It is so innocuous, you do not remember that you've got it on, and yet it tracks absolutely everything 24/7 via something from your wrist. It tracks your heart rate, it tracks your sleep, your recovery, all of your workouts, your resting heart rate, your heart rate variability, how much you're breathing throughout the night. It puts all of this into an app and spits out very simple, easy to understand, and fantastically usable data. It's phenomenal. I am a massive, massive fan of Whoop, and that is why it's the only wearable that I've ever stuck with. You can join for free, pay nothing for the brand new Whoop 4.0 strap. Plus, you get your first month for free, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. So you can buy it for free, try it for free, and if you do not like it, after 29 days, they will give you your money back. Head to join.whoop.com/modernwisdom. That's join.whoop.com/modernwisdom. But for now, it's time for a very, very hot potato with Johnny and Youssef. Johnny, I've got a present for you here. I'm not sure if you can see that.
Oh, yes.
This is a very, I mean, it's burning my fingers. I'm having to sort of, so if Johnny, if you can just.
What we all need is a potato prop.
Yeah, well, you've got one.
And then Dean can make it
look like a real potato. Yeah, but this is a real potato. You're up first, Johnny. What have you got for us?
It looks room temperature, but I'm happy to catch it. So I have what I think is the best list of life hacks I've ever had in the history of life hacks. Big shout. Are we ready?
Big shout.
For life hack number one. I think I've already told Yusuf this, but it is a waterproof notepad for the shower.
Oh.
So I have the most ideas and thoughts that ever occurred to me all day happen in the shower. And what I do is like try and leave my phone within sort of kind of touching distance so that...
Hey, Siri.
Exactly. Hey, Siri. But that doesn't work because the sound of the water is louder or like gets in the way. And then you try and make a note on your phone with shower hands and it's just not going to happen because it's like you end up typing the wrong word. So I bought it off Amazon. It's waterproof paper with a waterproof pencil. It's a suction onto like a tile or glass. And I just write it down. And then when I get out of the shower, I pull the thing off, put it in my OmniFocus. Captured. Turn showers. I reckon we've generated revenue now from my showers.
How does a waterproof pencil and waterproof paper work?
It's like, it's hard to describe, to be honest. It is like no other pencil and paper I've ever used in my life. So it looks like a pencil. It functions like a pencil. But somehow you're able to write on wet paper and it works and it doesn't wash off. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But of course, this requires... So I suppose it's part of a general kind of way that I'm trying to improve my life, which is I'm so confident now in OmniFocus because it's so much better than Tick-Tick that I know that the only thing I need to do is make sure I'm capturing everything. So I have like a pad of paper for when I'm meditating because that's another time that it happens. And I have this in the shower. And then I use like Siri in the car and my AirPods when I'm training and things like that. So it's just a game of how do I ensure that nothing slips through the cracks. And the shower, the waterproof pad of paper is the one I'm most proud of. Any questions?
You've got quite a lot of use out of it so far.
Loads.
You said you've I think you must have a really high density of shower thoughts.
So it's an average of like 3 to 4 things a shower.
How long's a shower for you?
5 minutes. Sometimes longer.
Yeah, what's interesting is I found shower thoughts correlate with viral tweets for me. So there's been times when I've poured my heart into crafting a tweet that I think, yeah, this ticks all the boxes to gain traction, gain followers, go viral, tumbleweeds. And then a stupid shower thought that you just think, oh, just next day you wake up and it's got thousands of likes and you're like, oh, I didn't really want that one to go viral.
Waterproof paper, man.
I think so.
Tweet from the paper.
Shower tweets, yeah.
That would be good. Like, and a waterproof iPad built into the wall. I think anything that increases or reduces friction for capture is going to be a winner. I don't think I have very many ideas in the shower. But I tend to shower on a night and you tend to shower in the morning, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Like by 9 p.m., 10 p.m. at night when I'm having my shower, like I'm all ideaed out.
So a few of these life hacks came from shower capture.
Wow, okay.
In the last episode, Johnny, you Pardon? Were showering in the nighttime because of sleep quality.
So I do after training. I shower in the nighttime after training, but not every night.
Interesting.
There we go.
Yusuf, what you got for us?
So I've got an anti-hack to start with. And the reason I'm saying this is because it might impact this episode. I've ordered a new dash cam because last time I had a car crash, my dash cam didn't pick up the footage because it was so old. So I got the worst of both worlds. And because it's over £100 value, Amazon have now started doing a one-time password that that they send you within 5 minutes of the delivery man coming, and you have to quickly tell him the passcode, and then you take your leave and go. So the problem is this might happen now. So yesterday I was on a podcast with Johnny and Menno Henselmans, and the Amazon man was like absolutely going mental on the door, and my flatmate answered the door, and he couldn't accept the parcel because he didn't have the password. You're thinking, would someone really like break into my house to take a parcel to get a dash cam? Like, it's health and safety gone mad.
So what's the hack?
So the hack is, like, yes, it's a nice piece of security, just like online banking, but it's possible to lock yourself out of your own accounts in many ways. So I actually am anti. I know everyone's all like, oh, you need two-factor authentication and one-time passwords and stuff, but I think it's a pain. The hack off the back of it is, if you want to avoid that, and there's certain accounts that you have to use for, you know, when it texts you a verification code and you have to type it in, is use Safari, because Safari will auto pull it in from your phone, and then you just put your finger on the Touch ID and it'll fill it in.
Does that work with everything? So does that work with PayPal, for example?
Yeah.
Really?
As long as it's sent to your number. If it's sent to mine, then...
No, of course. But so the point is, like, instead of having... Because a lot of companies have two-factor authentication now, but I guess because cybercrime's increased, I assume, because of the last year. So you can just get rid of that and do it with your face if you use Safari on your computer.
You can do it with your finger. I think they're going to launch Face ID in the next generation of Macs.
Oh, okay.
Face ID on Mac with a slightly more robust set of payment presets and address and details and all that sort of stuff is going to be so good. Matthew Kobach, that I had on the show a while ago, owns Fast. And the goal of Fast is that you never need to put your payment details in again. So that's like a cross-platform solution for this. So you'd have your Fast membership, and that would be across any website ever that you go into. It'll just auto-populate.
That's cool.
It's just
a real slippery slope, but it's so convenient.
Lots of people are buying stuff through e-com and other online stores, and they can't be asked to put their details in. Right, my first one. This is taken from Eliezer Yudkowsky, who is one of the guys behind LessWrong.com, part of the rationalist movement. And he was talking about how he encourages himself to get out of bed. Given that I've had a pretty unstable sleep and wake pattern for quite a long time, getting out of bed, even during COVID, just sinking into a regular sleep and wake pattern has been challenging. And for me, if I get out of bed on time, when I said I would, most of the rest of the day goes right. Whereas if I don't get out of bed at the time that I said I would, the rest of the day often tends to be a catastrophe. So getting out of bed, not staying in bed, not hitting the snooze button, those are all important things for me to make sure happen. I'm using two different sunrise alarm clocks because it's quite dark at the moment. So that's the first thing, but I've already spoken about that. Eliezer's advice is to count down from 10 and breathe quickly with each count. So if you think about anyone that's ever done a CrossFit workout or any sort of high intensity class, the coach will look at you if you're not doing something and go 3, 2, 1 back on the bar. And there's something about a countdown that forces you into action and gets you, yeah, it's like, well, you counted down from 3, like, I've got to do it. And honestly, if you struggle to wake up on a morning, I am one of those people, count down from 10 and big breath with each one. Honestly, it's such an easy hack, because you're like, there's no way I'm going back to sleep after 10 breaths plus I counted down, and then you just throw the covers off you and you're up. Yeah, exactly. You're full of O2 and the covers are off.
So what I have a similar contraption, which is when my alarm goes off, I've got a spring load at the head of my bed, which flips me up and drops me into some trousers.
Do you not need the dog to press that, though?
The dog presses it, then the toaster comes up in the air.
Jam hits it.
Jam hits the thing.
And then the potato gets baked.
Exactly. The only problem is if you're out of toast, because then it'll ping up. The jam flies goes where the toast should be, hits you in the face, then it's the wrong trousers.
I don't believe that for a moment, because you have cereal for breakfast rather than toast. The rest of it was fine.
Until that point.
The toaster room.
You know what? There's a few little moments like that where you get rumbled for a little detail. Like, someone went into my flatmate's bedroom and wrote him a semi-illegible note. And he came in and was like, Yusuf, did you write me that? Hang on, you don't have a pen.
Yeah. How do you guys make sure that you wake up on time on the morning? I know you're alarm free now, Johnny.
I know, it's great. So that's like the biggest win of 2020 for me, was
that's just massive.
Because every day was so similar, and there was no social stuff in the evening or nothing to throw me off. some of it is Becca, my girlfriend, to be honest. Like she loves sleep, whereas I find sleep an inconvenience. So like she wants to go to bed same time every day. So that's kind of my bedtime alarm. Like TV's off, so I'm not just going to sit in the dark on my own. So I go to bed at the same time roughly. And then just having the same wake time every day for a year. And now like I've even tried. So recently kind of tried to get a bit more sleep, tried to like push my sleep time, my wake time back a little bit, and I can't.
So we need to get Becca on the podcast. She's just got the wisdom of her forefathers, hasn't she? Like drilled into her daily routine.
I don't think she'd want to come on the podcast. I'll ask her though if Chris wants her on, but I don't think she'd
come on.
She'll
be at a
wedding. Too wise to come on.
She'll be too wise. She'll be busy at a wedding. Right, Johnny, what you got?
So this one's, I suppose, right now, not necessarily that relevant, but when gyms are back open again, I ordered, so I don't often use dumbbells in training because a lot of the things I would use dumbbells for, I'm limited because I'm so muscly and strong. I'm limited by being able to get the dumbbell in position. So like dumbbell press, incline press, overhead press, I just can't, like I can't, I'm not strong enough to get it in position and then use the range of motion. So I ordered from, they used to be on Amazon, they're not anymore. They're now on like Fitness Superstore or something. Power hooks, which they're only like 20, 30 quid. So you could take them to a gym with you. It's a metal handle that wraps around the dumbbell and then attaches to the handle itself. And you hold onto it and you're able to basically unrack the dumbbells as you would a barbell. So in a standing overhead press, you just hook them onto like a rig or a barbell at shoulder height or unrack it like a bench press. And suddenly dumbbell variations become how much weight can you use on the dumbbell variation, no shoulder injuries. Brilliant. So they're like 20, 30 quid, put them in your gym bag and then sorted.
What is your number one dumbbell movement that you've missed, what is the movement that dumbbells give you that you think a barbell can't, like the most, what's the first place that you go to with regards to a dumbbell movement?
So for me, I've always found when I do dumbbell bench press, it helps my bench press, which I know like obviously, but like I'm always limited by just being able to get the, you have to like get the dumbbells on your knees and then lie back and like flap around and then getting them off against a pain. So dumbbell bench press for me is the biggest thing. And I don't like overhead press with a barbell particularly. It just doesn't, my shoulders don't like it. Whereas dumbbells, because you can kind of angle the dumbbell and it's an easier range of motion. So those two, like the most obvious, that's why I bought them.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I like it, man. I really fell in love with seated strict overhead press this year. Such a good exercise. Because
very nice.
Yeah, you can just get yourself locked in, especially if you have a little bit of spinal instability like me and Seth do. Like you can just brace yourself against, so you'd have the bench at that one, like the first notch that allows you to sit back a tiny bit, and then you can give your upper back a little bit of room. And I think it'd be interesting to see if you find that overhead position uncomfortable from a seated strict press, Johnny, because it's a lot more comfortable for me.
So I don't have an incline bench. I train in my, like I have a gym in my garage and I don't have an incline bench. So I'm limited it with that.
But got dining chairs though.
I do have dining chairs. I've never thought about that, you know, but that literally would fix the problem.
Well, did you not see this over summer when the first lockdown happened? There was tons and tons of videos of like lads in the garden, with like some unfortunate garden trestle chair. It's just a classic plastic barbecue chair. And they've got themselves plus like quite a bit of weight. And you can see the legs are just going like this.
Oh, horrible.
I think like falling with a barbell in your hands while you're falling, it's awful, isn't it? The thought of it.
So much can go wrong.
Yeah. I've seen people put barbells on wheelie bins, like two wheelie bins, and then the wheelie bin lids cave in and stuff like that.
I think we've probably had every possible variation of barbell injury, from like dropping it on your toe to like clipping your chin when you're doing an overhead press. That is awful. Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
Or you bite your tongue.
Yeah, that's bad.
Well, I thought of you, Chris, with these, because wasn't the source of your back injury a dumbbell clean?
It was, yeah, correct. Fuck, so that's three years ago, that, well remembered.
I don't know why I remember that, but it's something that I always, whenever I'm like moving something into place, I always think like, Chris, be careful.
Chris hurt himself.
So yeah, so like whenever you're doing a dumbbell overhead press, if you're doing like four sets that's four, maybe more. So I'm actually doing like density style circuits with these, with dumbbells at the moment. So it's multiple sets of low reps. That's like 10 or 15 cleans that I would have to do. And I'm terrible at them.
So there's a recurring theme there. Like, I remember a few years ago, I've got a really crisp memory of me lying on the floor, like in tears, and Chris came with a care package of malt loaf and smoothie, and it was and like Voltarol. It was really, really heartwarming.
Voltarol.
And that was because I think at like 6 a.m, I had the 50 kilo dumbbells trying to get them into place for lying bench press. And like, it's when you try and get it onto your thighs as the first step before you roll back onto your back. And I missed my leg. And so I'm like swinging around with one dumbbell, and I felt something ping, and I was like, I'll just deal with that in a second. Did my set. While you're doing the set, you feel your back just going like, oh no. And then when I put them down, I was like, I'm just gonna have to go home. There's one other moment like that where someone we know, Robbie, was doing lateral raises with the metal dumbbells. And between reps, he just dinked his bell end between the dumbbells. And that was game over. He just like stopped the workout, went home.
Glanzomegaly negri, isn't it?
Instant.
That would really hurt. Really, really hurt.
Power hooks. I like it. Seth, what you got?
This from AliExpress. I mean, AliExpress should be the life hack, actually, because it's a great way to just buy a bunch of tat. And I think I'm going to do a series on YouTube of
Ali hack.
Tat I bought on AliExpress. Tat hacks. So this is a lighter. You know, so Chris, one of your recommendations a while ago was have a long lighter so you can light candles and stuff. This is basically, how dodgy is this?
Oh my God.
Can you hear that?
Yeah. So can you describe, for people that are listening, can you describe what it is?
It looks dangerous.
It's a, just basically, I think it's a taser. Taser. But
it's a taser.
But you just put it into the candle and it lights it up. You charge it with your USB-C.
Wow. I mean, only on AliExpress are you going to get that, because there's no way that it's legal. I mean, what am I even going to call that? Like, buy a miniature taser to light a candle?
Illegal taser. Yeah.
Like, I'm so tempted to just be like, but I feel like I might.
I was going
to
say, have you done it? Have you stuck something in it?
Too scared.
If you've done it, just do it to yourself. Just go like that really quickly. It's not really high voltage, is it?
No, but like, so what do I stand to gain? Like, I know it's gonna hurt in some way.
Content. I think it's, content. You know where the parameters are, and also content, yeah.
So knowing how much it hurts is a...
I think it's good. It's good to know like the lay of the land, isn't it, or something like that. Like, okay, I did that once. Yeah. I'll not do that again.
Yeah. Okay. What am I going to do? Right. So one of the things that I and probably almost everyone else have been struggling with over the last year has been finding that sort of gas and that motivation and that energy throughout the day, not in a I need a coffee way or I need to have some food, more like I've been on my own in my house working or doing whatever, and I just need to feel a little bit more energized the same way that you would whenever you have a conversation with someone or have to get out of the car. And especially before a podcast, because I tend to record on an evening, I'm trying to find, you know, it's 6 p.m. I've maybe been up since 6:45. So it's 12 hours after I got up and I've got to do the thing where I peak perform. So what I've taken to doing is turning some music on, like making a miniature playlist of maybe sort of 2 or 3 songs on Spotify and just doing a little mobility circuit of a couple of press-ups, a couple of squats, you know, maybe some stretches, or for my Achilles, some calf raises and stuff like that, whilst listening to some music at a fairly good volume. And the difference with a little bit of blood flow, you'd think I'm going to move more, that would make me more tired. But that time where you've got brain fog and your thoughts aren't really too clear, it's quite difficult to describe, but you know what I mean. You just feel foggy and not really sharp and on it. And yeah, like 5 minutes, even just 5 minutes of that and a big glass of cold water. I think a lot of this, the unifying thread that we discovered was when you told me about your acupuncture mat, Seth, and you said it's just a state change. You're just looking for something to change the state that your body's in. Could it be cold shower? Could it be sauna? Could it be a walk? Could it be some exercise with some music that gets you emotionally invested into it? All of these different structures. But this is one that you can pretty much always do no matter where you are. You can always go and do a little couple of press-ups, couple of squats, some music on. And I feel better. It's not a panacea for low energy, but it works more often than it doesn't.
I really like that. Just a little kick up the bum and it's always accessible.
Yeah. Miniature little playlist on Spotify, like some good tunes from when you were a little bit younger that you absolutely love that are energetic. And then, yeah, you're away.
So I have a life hack that's very, very related to that. A little bit different, but very related. So specifically for like, so I think generally I think a lot of people underestimate how a song can completely like night and day change your mood, either for the better or for the worse. And something I've heard a lot of people talk about, but I've never really done, is protecting your like training playlists. So have songs in your, have a playlist in Spotify that you only listen to when you're training.
Don't you have a PR song?
I do, yeah, I have a few. Yeah.
The problem is if that comes on shuffle and you're like,
you've got to always have your belt on underneath whatever clothes you're wearing and you just leave it on.
Oh, I'm going to have to go
picking up Janice in the office. Sorry, Janice, how much do you weigh? 102. Right, brilliant.
Set of 10.
Yeah.
But so the thing that I've noticed especially is like songs that you... So I have every year you get a favorites thing on Spotify, like a 2020
rewind
favorites and whatever. So I have a playlist which is all of those in one called just past favorites. So it's all of my favorites from every year since like whenever I got Spotify, like 2015. So it's a lot.
Yeah. You guys are so advanced with your Spotify use. I feel like such a little.
It's what happens when you pay £2 a month for a membership. as opposed to scoring it for free. Yeah. Okay, so you've got all of these, and then what have you done? Have you made a top filtering off the top of all of them?
It's just that, well, so it's when something comes on generally, like I'll occasionally listen to that place if I've got nothing to listen to, and there'll be something comes on, you're like, oh, this like I haven't heard this song in 3 years. Put it in the training playlist and only listen to it. And it songs like that just create this effect that, and we've all had it, right? Like a song that like comes on when you're somewhere and you're like, oh my God, I've not heard that in ages. So have a training playlist that you're always curating and always adding things to, but protect it because that effect it diminishes the more you listen to them.
Have a sacred training playlist. Yeah, I like that.
And you can do that with everything, right? So you can have a sleep playlist, a morning playlist, a work playlist.
This is one of the things that I've been reading Jonathan Haidt's The Happiness Hypothesis, and he talks a lot about the sacred and the profane. And there's not really much now that people treat in normal day-to-day life as sacred. Like if you actually think about what it is, it's weird stuff. Like, it's obvious stuff, like not being molested on the street. Like your personal body is sacred, right? Like obviously. But think about like other things around rituals. Like even people wear their shoes in their bedroom. People wear the shoes they've been outside in their bedroom. That would never be accepted in like a subcontinental culture. Like,
God, if you did that in a Muslim household, you'd get the slipper.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, but the slipper wouldn't touch the floor. The slipper would be off and it would be there to beat you with.
You'd have to go outside to the porch, take the slipper and run inside.
Yeah, exactly. So I like having more sacred things, like having routines. I think that's part of the reason why we all love having morning routines, right? Like it's sacred. Sacred bit of time. Thank you.
Very good.
Seth, what you got?
So you guys might not be aware of this, but I actually split my life hacks into physical and digital. And so I'm attempting to to alternate here. My digital one is Evernote Legacy. So I'm currently a Evernote refugee. Evernote, for anyone that doesn't know, they rolled out an update that was basically a global downgrade to every part of the function of Evernote, and it's lost its fitness for purpose. And so while I'm waiting for another app to bridge the gap and allow import functionality, which for me, I've got my eyes set on Craft. I'm just waiting for the developers to allow Evernote import. is you can use the legacy version of Evernote in the meantime. So the hack is don't upgrade to the new Evernote. Even though it looks nicer, it just won't work. Stick with the legacy version, but the problem is that's unsupported. So as operating systems grow, it's going to hit a point where it's no longer compatible. So
by wanting to continue to use Evernote Legacy, you also can't update any other parts of your operating system in case it gets turned
yeah
off.
Exactly. So this is not a permanent hack. This is an interim measure until.
Can you downgrade? Let's say that I accidentally upgrade to new Evernote. Is there a way that I can downgrade?
You can, but you might lose all your notes because this is why how bad it is, because they've removed the offline storage functionality, so it's just risky business. I wouldn't do it.
Hopefully no big Evernote fans are sat there with the new version of Evernote.
I don't think anyone's a big fan of Evernote now, man. Like Notion, Rome have just come in and captured the attention on the internet for all that.
This is exactly it. Like Evernote have stayed so far in the past, and it's such a shame because they were such a big company that had so much capital and poised
massive to... first mover advantage in the note taking space as well, right? Like think about do you know what it is? It's Blockbuster to Netflix. It's like you had it all. You had the brand equity, you had the user base, you had the faith in the brand.
And you just... I don't trust this new internet business nor VHS tapes. And then you go, all right, fine, but
if you cannot get it on 8-bit, it's not worth a look. Unbelievable. I listened to Johnny Wilkinson on the High Performance Podcast with Jake Humphrey and his scientific friend, and it's one of the best podcasts that I've listened to in a very long time. If you want to hear someone that you think should just be a hard guy talking about being in the present moment, about detachment from the ego, about embracing your true self, all this stuff, and you just think, like, hang on, I thought he was a posh meathead. And Johnny Wilkinson just sounds like he's done about 50,000 ayahuasca ceremonies. It's wonderful. And one of the things...
This is the rugby player, Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, man. He's fucking fully awakened now. Like, absolutely fully awakened. And the episode's amazing. It's one of the best podcasts I've ever heard.
Wow.
Which is
what should we search for?
It's Johnny Wilkinson High Performance Podcast. Also on that show is Eddie Hearn. And Eddie Hearn, you just think as the same thing, kind of a Essex wide boy idiot with some cash behind him who understands fighters. Like he's quoting Warren Buffett. He talks about how he understands his inner motivations from the way that his father treated him as a kid. Like the guy is switched on. He's just so many more layers deep than I knew. both of those guys really changed my opinion of them in great ways whilst listening to them. But what I took from the Johnny Wilkinson episode is find joy today. And what he talks about is that a lot of people presume that happiness is something that they will get to enjoy in the future when they've got past the things that they need to do today. But the future never comes. Like joy has to be found in the moment. And one of the most consistent mantras that I've written as part of morning journaling has been... just find joy today, like find joy in the thing that you do. So this morning I went for a walk and it's frost, like sharp frost on the floor, but it's really nice. It's really still. The sun's sort of shooting through the clouds. I haven't got my phone on me and I'm just able to be like, this is really, really nice. Like this makes me quite happy. The sky's clear. I can see birds. There was a dog on the other side of the street. I enjoyed the dog. Like just finding joy today and not presuming that it's a thing that you get to do in the future once you've got today out of the way.
It's a really important point, especially for people that listen to this podcast. I think we're all going to be more on the spectrum of deferring enjoyment and investing in ourselves long term. And it's quite easy to lose sight of the fact that you're still living your life right now. And so finding some kind of inherent enjoyment from things that you do day to day is really important.
I think you're quite good with that, Johnny. Obviously, that was one of the big reasons that you bought a dog, right? Was to kind of take you out of that neurotic sort of self-involved, business-involved mind. And I'm going to kind of focus on another being and kind of just be present with it.
Yeah, Well, it's like there's just certain aspects of having a dog that you just cannot avoid. Like it needs to be taken for a walk. There's no, it's not negotiable really. So yeah. And it is like the automating laughing and happiness. Definitely. Daily thing. It's brilliant.
Johnny, what you got?
It's me. Right. So my, this hack is related to reading speed, but I should preface this with, I am now, big moment, drum roll, reading again. And the reason that I'm reading again, which is kind of a life hack within the life hack, is something that Youssef really kind of flicked a switch in my brain and explained to me, which is the power of things like Evernote, Craft, all these bits of software. I've never really had a use for them. I've never really understood, like, I just take notes and then don't refer to the notes and it's just pointless. But hearing Youssef explain this like second brain idea, and how if you, as you read a book or as you listen to a podcast or you're learning something that you think like, yeah, I'll need this in the future, then using that app as your searchable database for information. So I've now, when I'm writing notes about books and when I'm writing notes about like Q&A calls I'm listening to on courses we're on, I'm writing it as though like, when I need this in the future, what do I think I'll search for? What do I think I'll type in to find it? So like this morning, Youssef asked me a question. I was like, I'm sure I typed literally a keyword in, and suddenly three or four notes that I've made on that thing get brought up. And I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. That's already in my brain. I just can't recall it. So I have to use something else. So that means that I've kind of, all right, it makes sense to read now. I kind of understand why I'm reading again. And a tip related to that I got from Mark Manson, which you two may have already come across. When you're reading, you tend to have like the inner voice that's reading aloud. So you're like reading in your head, and that limits your reading speed quite a lot. And if you just stop that, so like when you're watching a film with subtitles, you don't read the words in your head as the film's happening. You just look at it and you've read it. And you can do that with a book if you just decide to do that with a book. So you just look at the words and you're like, I've read the page, and lo and behold, it's there. So just, I suppose two in one. I've kind of jumped the queue a little bit, but one of them is using something like Evernote. If you have it as, whenever I learn something, I'm going to put it in here so that I can search for this topic in the future. And what would that look like, that note? And then secondly, if you are then going to read from that or read as a result of that, just stop reading the words in your head and you read way quicker.
Nice. So use something like Evernote, but not Evernote.
But not Evernote. Shit. Well, so Youssef recommended Craft to me. So that's what I've started using.
It seems at the moment like Rome is really sort of picking up speed, but I've never touched Rome. I've seen Notion and a couple of other things. What advice have you got for stopping the inner voice in your head whilst reading, other than just saying stop?
I don't know. I think like what I think of is, if this, exactly the example I gave, like if this were a film and I was reading subtitles, I would just look at the words. Like when you read things in normal life, when you're not trying to read them, you still read the words. Like you can still understand the sentence written down. Like when you look at a sign, you don't go turn left at the next exit. It's just, you look at it and you understand it. And you just scan it quickly.
There's a tip from Tony Buzan about stopping this, which is you give your audiophonic loop in your head something to do. So you either think of a tune that doesn't have words, or you repeat something to yourself. This is an exercise. This isn't something you do for all of your reading for the rest of your life, but it's just to be able to learn that you can, as Johnny said, you can detach the audiophonic loop from reading, and you don't have to be like, the cat sat on the mat.
That's awesome. That's a good tip.
Yeah,
it feels weird because it feels like you're not reading initially, but if you kind of test yourself on the recall of what have I just read, it's amazing how like, it took you seconds to read the page when it previously would have taken a minute, but you've still taken it all in.
The problem I have with note taking whilst reading is that I don't sink into the content anywhere near as deeply. And this is why for me, reading on Kindle and then using progressive summarization highlighting makes a lot more sense, because you can just go through, highlight as you go, and then single batch process the entire book. Once you're done, go back through and make the key takeaways. Plus, if you're using Readwise, which is actually, I'll just explain that one as my next one after this. But if you're using Readwise, then they'll deliver them to you on a daily basis.
But, so I suppose the tip is more like, if you, so I see, like, I was explaining this to Yusuf, and Yusuf's like way further down the rabbit hole with me than this stuff. This is, I'm just learning, but I see OmniFocus as like my RAM on a computer. So like, if something is said to me, all I need to do is make sure it goes from there and into, and I know that system will take care of it. And then the other thing, so Evernote or Craft or Roam or whatever, is like your hard drive. So I don't need it now. I may never need it, but if I have a findable version of it in the future, when I want to learn, when I'm like, I want to get more into meditation, what are the best resources about meditation? I'll just type meditation into my hard drive. And I'm like, oh yeah, I read a book 6 months ago about that reference something tiny that now I can make use of. So that doesn't really matter how you make the notes, I suppose, as long as it's findable whenever you want that thing in the future.
That's a great analogy. As long as you have as you start to build more and more notes, because I think I've got 5,000 or so at this point, that's where you start to need a decent tagging structure more and more. And the benefit of tags as well as notebooks is notebooks are the hierarchical structure that's, you know, organized and you've created it deliberately. But tags allow things to straddle across multiple notebooks because they are themes that are shared but don't necessarily fit into a single notebook, and over time you start to build this emergent structure and eventually cross links between notes that previously didn't happen. And that's why Roam has become so popular, because it allows ideas to have sex with each other.
Or you can downgrade back from new Evernote to Evernote Legacy and just get rid of all of your notes and you don't have this problem at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Then you just
it's like the Men in Black flash pen, isn't it?
Thiago Forte threw shade at the new Evernote in a tweet recently, saying like, I love how the new Evernote is like replicating the human brain by like randomly forgetting certain notes.
It's like a true external brain. Like it acts, like sometimes you go and find it, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Weird.
Brilliant.
I just can't remember.
Yeah. What you got, Seth?
So, yeah.
So this one is a physical life hack, and this is the, what does it say? Arsipurl or something.
Arsipod.
Arsipurl.
Is this from Arsipurl. AliExpress again?
This is actually from Amazon, but I you can definitely get them from AliExpress as well. And it is a retractable triple charger. So it has all three, because everyone's got like 100 little USB cables that are different end things, and it's really, and you've got like a drawer with them somewhere. This just has three in one. It's a little Medusa. And it's got the big three. So it has that one, that one.
So is that USB-C, Lightning, and micro USB?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's on a little sort of retractable reel with ratchets on, so you can make it longer and shorter.
It's fantastic, because then it just tidies up your room as well, because we've got those little devices, you know, like your little taser.
Have you ever accidentally retracted it whilst a device has been attached to it and flung it across the desk?
It either breaks the device or stops charging it, depending on how heavy the device is.
I have to say, like, everyone's gone through a million charges across their lifetime, and I treat my charges now with so much care. I'm just like, right, I'm not going to wind them up like hard. I'm just going to keep them as straight as possible. That device programs in the opposite to that. It's just stretching them and bending them and twisting them around.
Yeah, but it's in a controlled way. But yeah, you're right. Like, we all know.
I just wonder how long it's going to last.
They've lasted like a year so far. But yeah, we all know someone who's got like a charger that's like held together with like bits of like hair bubbles and rope and like live wires like sticking out of it, going like.
Well, isn't one of your previous life hacks the putty that you put at the end of the
Sugru
at the end of the, just to stop it from fraying? Because if your Mac charger phrase, it's like 50-60 quid for a new one, isn't it? 80 quid.
Wow. That was with student discount. I think it was 86 quid without.
Fucking.
They've just got you by the curlies, haven't they?
They really do.
The short and curlies.
They really do.
Right. This is the biggest change I've made to my productivity in 2021, and probably been the single best thing that I've done. And Johnny's going to hate me because he's been doing it for ages. It's called First Things First. So basically, what is the one thing that if I did it today, it would make the entire rest of my day feel like a success? And you just do that when you sit down at your desk. I'm going to do a doubler here. So first things first is just choose what the highest leverage task, the most important task for the day is that requires the most energy, the most input, and do that as you sit down. One of the things that I'm big into is trying to remove the anxiety you have of undone tasks because of an open loop. Like at the end of every day, you kind of shake the Etch-a-Sketch and you get to restart the next day. But each day you have to meditate and exercise and go for a walk and do the rest of it. And the longer that you get through your day without having done that, the more that your mental RAM is taken up thinking about the fact that you still need to do it. Whereas if you can do those things first in the morning, I've already meditated, I've read, I've done my journaling, I've got the main task for the day out of the way, the rest of the day just feels so much more liberated and you can genuinely enjoy it as opposed to constantly having this like future task that you're concerned about. So first things first is important, and this is related to Chris Sparks's number one productivity tip, which is plan what you're going to do today the night before. And he says that every 1 minute you spend planning on the night before is worth 10 minutes the following day. So what I've been using is the 6 Minute Diaries new product, which is the 6 Minute Success Journal, very similar to most other productivity journals, but I just prefer the process that they've got. That'll be linked in on Amazon. And just my evening routine now involves choosing the task, that thing. They call it big piece of cake. But it should be what frog do you want to eat? Like, what is the most high leverage, uncomfortable, but best return task that you need to do? And I'm just waking up on a morning and I know what I need to do. And if I do that thing, even if the rest of the day is completely awful, it doesn't matter. So I've got this TED talk coming up, and like planning for a TED talk to go and do some time writing at like 3 PM is just bollocks. But if you've got up, you've done your morning routine, you sit down at your desk and you nail 2.5 hours planning a talk, you're like, right, I've done it, that's it, I've completed my day. Now I don't care about these annoying little emails, because I'm like, it's like dancing through a daisy field, because you just feel like everything's already been sorted. So yeah, first things first, and then plan what you're going to do the night before. And the process I'm using for that is the 6 Minute Success Journal, which I think is absolutely awesome.
Fantastic.
That's a cool tip. So I've got one. So on the same theme as that, a lot of these things for me, like productivity tips, are things that I learned like the first time I read Getting Things Done, whenever that was. And I like read it at the time, I was like, oh, that's stupid. And then like 6 years later, you're like, ah, now I understand. So with the big piece of cake style of things to do, so like planning a TED talk, I think we all have on our to-do list something like that, or maybe your to-do list is full of things like that, that seems so large and painful and difficult that you just kind of never do anything with them. So actually what those are in GTD land are projects, not single actions. And all you can ever do is a single action. So all you can ever do is the thing that is the one, like, I'm going to do this and it's completed. So breaking something like that down into single actions, and then only looking at the one, only considering the first step of that project, is such an easy way to kind of always be nudging things forward all the time in your life. So like, I want to, I don't know, get some artwork from a room in my house. Like, all right, oh God. And then you sit down to try and do it, and there's 10 steps to it. And you try and do all of those at once, you're probably not going to do it. But if step one is ask a friend to recommend 2 websites that I can look at, you can fire that text off and suddenly 10 projects are moving forward every day in little ways, and there's not really any resistance to it. And before you know it, they've all been done. So basically the hack is, if you've got anything on your to-do list that you are considering doing today that is a huge thing, instead of that, break it down into 10 things, into the 10 steps. So if you were explaining to somebody else, how are you going to do this action? What do those 10 steps look like? And only the first one should be on your to-do list, if that makes sense. And that's for anyone who's read Getting Things Done, that is just how David Allen explained it 30 years ago whenever the book was read. It's only just...
we've just come across it now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's I think one of the main reasons people procrastinate is that they don't know what to do next. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time I'll speak to the boys that are in the office about an assignment that they're struggling to do, and they're like, "Oh, mate, I was in the library all day yesterday, and I'm here. I was in the office today, and you know this. I've got this big assignment coming in." You go, "Okay, have you made the document on which you're going to write the assignment?" "Yeah." "Oh, well, no, I have. I mean, right, okay." And it's like, so a big part of that, and I think me and Yusuf probably suffer with this a little bit more than you, Johnny, is to know that time dedicated to planning and reviewing is more important than time dedicated to the task. Like, if you spend time before you do a thing constructing how you're going to do the thing, it makes everything so much easier. And if you don't do it, that it's basically a different challenge. It's a totally different challenge to try and manifest what do I need to do and then how am I going to do it, as opposed to batching. Okay, first I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do that, then I'm going to ring the person, then I'm going to get the paperwork, then I'm going to go blah, blah, and just doing that. And after that, it's literally just a case of some past version of you, yeah, step after step after step.
The next step from that is, sorry.
No, just similar to the Chris Sparks thing, that is it an ounce of planning is worth a pound of execution or something like that. I definitely do struggle with, if I haven't done that, I roll into the morning like a PS1 RPG character that walks into the wall and then carries on walking and then slowly rotates on that axis and keeps walking.
Yeah,
it's so linked. Sorry.
It's just that we presume, if I can get started on this task now, I'll make progress on this task now. Planning's taking time away from me doing the thing. And you're like, yeah, but it's deciding to drive to a place without knowing where the place is or the route you're going to take. It's just getting in the car and putting your foot down. Like, okay, I mean, before that, I should probably get the map out, have a look at the route, realize where I need to go, and then I can do it.
The hidden benefit of all of this that you don't necessarily realize until you've broken things down in that way is that when you have, like, when you're on a walk and you think, oh, I'll call someone, right? Or like, I've got a bit of spare time, I'll call someone. And you've got 20 projects in your life broken down into next steps, and five of them have things in them with the tag phone call. You can make five phone calls in the 50 minutes that previous you were like, at some point you need to make this phone call. Dun, 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 dun. And like all those things be moved forward. So it's kind of facilitating the, when you have, you know, you sat waiting, or you're on your phone, or you're browsing Amazon, you think, oh yeah, I wonder if there's anything that I've kind of forgotten. And you can filter through all of the little tiny subsections in your life that, when I'm putting the art on the wall that I'm going to buy, I'm going to need picture hooks, I'm going to need, so done. So it's just a way of like reducing resistance, I suppose, planning and then making things easier on yourself in the future. And who doesn't want that?
Everyone.
Easy things are nice, aren't they?
They're lovely. Seth?
So on the journal theme, there's an app called Day One, which I can't remember if I've mentioned it on a previous Life Hacks, but it is beautiful. And it's very much designed for journaling and diaries and stuff. So it bridges that gap where Johnny was talking about the RAM, which is working memory of your brain, stuff that needs doing and needs to be in the system, but isn't going to be stored long term. It's not going to be archived. And actually, if it was in your external brain, it would clog things up. And then you've got the archive, which is the stuff that you want to refer to in the future. But you might have this stuff in the kind of in-between bay, which is reflective stuff that doesn't have an immediate next action, but is a way to kind of take all these thoughts and neuroses and patterns and things and just put them into boxes and clarify your own thoughts and manage your emotions. And that's the whole purpose of a diary or a journal. And I think I definitely see the value in Chris's approach of like having a handwritten journal that gives you prompts and questions. But if you're the kind of person that hates handwriting and you want a free form thing, then Day One is very good. The other benefit of it is that it's, because it's designed like a diary, it allows you to, it tracks a lot of data, but it's all held on your device, in terms of location, photos that you took that day. It's designed to really create like a tapestry of your life, so you can look back on it, and it's just quite a cool way to be like, oh yeah, this is like a memoir.
I use Day One for more sort of significant emotional life events. It's also like password protected, which is kind of good, so people can't just stumble upon Well, I mean, to be fair, like my journal's not where the worst stuff on my phone is, but my camera roll's got some fairly awful stuff on it as well.
So that's another one when you like, you know, you're trying to show someone like, oh, here's the new wall that I've had painted, and you have to like scroll through the, and people are like,
no, look at my fucking camera roll, mate. Yeah.
So just not to kind of bowl in and do the, like, what I was doing it before was cool. I've been using Day One since February 2012.
Wow.
So the additional thing that it does, which you two may have had, is like occasionally it'll say, read this post on this day from 5 years ago.
It's and very well designed, isn't it?
The benefit I get from it is like, you know, you go down this like personal development rabbit hole and you think like, is it really doing anything? I'm not really sure. And then you read something, you read like the thoughts that you were having 4 years ago, and you're like,
it's my favorite thing. You look back on something old and you're like, what a twat, I can't believe he was.
I think there's an equivalent to hedonic adaptation. It's like productivity adaptation, because you're always wanting to further refine the edges, and it's difficult to remember how bad you were. And also, you presume that as you get older, you should be compounding your effectiveness. So you don't want to be comparing your productivity now to your productivity 5 years ago, but your mindset around how you feel and the thoughts that consume your consciousness, that is really stark. Like when I think, man, I once wrote in my Day One, I once wrote a major concern that the MC that spoke on the mic over the R&B DJ in room 2 at Riverside had left. And I was concerned that was going to ruin the room and that would be the end of the business. And that was worthy of putting into my like personal thought emotion journal. And now like I don't even know the name of the person that does that. Like it just
That's
doesn't
cool.
it doesn't matter.
It's not even so a speck on your
doesn't even arise in consciousness. No.
There was something I read, a guy we've had on our podcast a couple of times called John Romanello talks about the value of having like a long standing journal, being you realize like, firstly, brilliant things and terrible things come and go, they pass, and you have got through all of the things that have been the worst things that have ever happened to you, and now it's all fine. So like you can read back to how you were dealing with what you perceive to be the worst thing ever at the time, and like journaling at the time helps a bit because you get to write it down, I guess, and like, externalize the mental talk. But being able to look back on that 3 years later and go, you know what, like if anything like that happens again, it'll probably be okay. It's just a nice like tapestry of, this is how my thoughts have evolved, but now when something similar happens, I deal with it better. And so yeah, I think it's Day One, I think it's probably the best app for it, isn't it? There's not
it's free
really
as well. I think there's a paid version for extra features too. But
it's got a partner app on MacBook as well, doesn't it? That links in.
A little tab at the top, like a little bookmark thing that drops down.
Yeah. I've only recently got the phone app, to be honest. I've had
That's
the Mac
all
app
like
the, time,
all the it's like music you listen to, or is it does it do that on the Mac app as well?
Not as much. The phone app, as you said, is more designed for the tapestry.
Mm.
I think more it gives emojis. You prompts as well. It's not totally freeform. Like I think it can say like, what's the
So it's the phone app where I get like the see what you were doing in January.
Have you got notifications for Day One turned on?
I have.
Wow.
For that reason.
That's
to get
huge
to be allowed through the gate that is your notification barrier. Special.
I've got a life hack related to that as well.
Interesting. Deliveroo, I think, is the only Deliveroo and phone calls are the only
like
two.
Your
things.
Food is coming.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I'm bothered about.
So the only things that Day One notifies me about is either read this journal entry, which is always interesting, and like you can set the notification to fill the journal in to be randomized, and I think that's the best way.
What have you done this week or whatever?
Yeah, and so like that, I just use that as the prompt. And if there's nothing interesting, I just don't bother. So
that's really cool. Yeah, I've got to be fair, all these different functions I haven't bothered digging into. Right. So this is one that I realized last year, and it's a bit of an uncomfortable truth, but I think I'm really enjoying telling people things that they don't want to hear at the moment. So I got shouted out on the internet for talking about Trump, and then I got shouted out on the internet for talking about existential risk, and I got shouted out on the internet for talking about the single biggest predictor of extramarital sex being premarital sex. But facts don't care about your feelings, and this is another one of them. The thing that you need to remember, whoever you are that's listening, is that you are the common denominator in every experience within your life. So imagine that you always seem to be looked over for promotions at work, or people just, your partners always seem to kind of get sick of you after around about 6 months, or your friends always do invite you out to things, or you always are the first person that gets picked for the sports team, or whatever it is, both good and bad. If there is a recurring theme in your life, you are the common denominator, not them. So a lot of the time I'll have a conversation with someone. I had a conversation with someone yesterday who I regularly sort of semi-regularly speak to, maybe once every couple of months. And the conversation always has the same tone to it, always has the same sort of feeling. It's a little bit antagonistic. It's quite sort of debatey. It's a little bit self-righteous. And I remember saying, like, man, like, is this how you are with everyone? He's like, no. And I was like, well, I don't have this conversation with anyone else but you. So it, like, in the nicest way possible, it's not me. Like, I only do this when you arrive. So you're the common denominator within this situation. And it just reminds us that so much of what happens in life is within our control, at least with regards to our responses and the way, the tenor that we have when we do things. So yeah, remember that you're the common denominator.
So if ever there's a theme, if ever there's like something happens more than it doesn't, you think, well, if it's normally happening to me, then I probably have some involvement in it.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if whenever there's a problem, you always deal with it. Like, you're the common denominator. Like, you are dealing with the problems. And the reason it's an uncomfortable truth is that it forces us to realize that our failures are ours to bear, but also our successes are ours to bear, especially if they're consistent.
It's not a truth that a lot of people would accept or want to hear, because they get more benefit from being the victim or the martyr or the whatever the role that they're playing than they do from taking personal responsibility and taking agency. And I think, yeah, I can see how if you say that to certain people, like, oh, I mean, that thing always happens to you, but it doesn't happen to anyone else. So maybe it can be a bit like, oh, well, no, because they're just all a dick. Like, every boss I've ever had has been a dick. Or
every ex-girlfriend has always found me to be possessive. Okay. Like, what's more likely, that all of them happen to have the same weird quirk, or that you are the person that is causing it? I mean, the problem is, obviously, there are things that aren't our fault, and there are things that go wrong, which are out of our control, and that are unfortunate and unlucky. So the kernel of truth that this could have occurred once, you could have been with a girl who was an absolute, or a guy who was an absolute dick to you, and said that you were a bunch of ways that you're not. That can be true. But if that continues to happen,
then with a higher and higher confidence interval, the probability of it being them becomes lower.
It's you.
There's also just no downside to doing like the Jocko Willink, like just taking complete responsibility for everything. Because there's never really, like, yeah, it's you might make you feel a bit sad, but like, at least you're trying to solve the problem and working towards a solution or an improvement.
That's a good point. Like, even when it's not you, it no still downside. Probably benefits you to yeah. just be like, well, I'll just take I'll just care of it anyway. It. Mm-hmm.
Johnny.
Are we still on long form, or are we doing quick fire?
Let's do a quick fire. Also, if you've watched anything on Netflix or read anything recently, probably be a good place to throw some stuff in here.
Okay. So I have some fitnessy ones, some quick ones. Quite a lot of people I know, myself included, are very consistent with like a multivitamin and vitamin D, but quite inconsistent with creatine. I don't know whether either of you two have this problem.
You have just described me, my friend.
So I have had this problem in my life for ages, for like as long as I can remember. And it's actually credit to MyProtein who fixed this. So they sent us a box of stuff to review like pre-Christmas. And in that box was a tub of creatine tablets, creatine monohydrate tablets, that like I'd always looked over because I thought, well, you know, what benefits that? But now I just take 5 creatine tablets when I take my multivitamin, and I always take my creatine.
That's a good way to put it in, because the only time that you have creatine if you're not having it in tablet form is if you also have a shake, and you don't always have a shake every day.
Exactly. So I very rarely miss vitamin D, because it's like in the morning with breakfast, like multivitamin, vitamin D. And then creatine's like, oh, well, later I'll mix some kind of like squash and water and I'll have it then. And I always forget.
Or like mostly forget. There's more steps involved in creatine. Mm-hmm. I think off the back of that, I have been more consistent with creatine recently, but that's because, one, I use Crea Pure rather than creatine monohydrate, which is it's the same, but it's just more purified. Doesn't give me the same nausea that normal creatine does, which is, again, it's like the whole James Clear thing. Like, if it's unpleasant to do, if it makes you feel nauseous, then you're like, you're like, oh, well, I'll have it after my meal, not before. And and also mixing in hot water. So if I have a morning cup of tea, I'll have it before or after the tea.
I just can't. The thought of putting like creatine in my morning coffee just feels.
I wouldn't put it in the morning coffee. Just have it before or after with a little bit of hot water, not boiling.
So but all
it's a faff though.
Yeah, the only downside of the tablets are they are quite big. So if you're not great with taking tablets in general, but I've actually found it's a quite a nice thing to train yourself. So initially I had to do one tablet at a time. Now I'm just all 5 in at once. So
it's like when Johnny was at mine and I ordered a big bag of carrots and he helped me put them away in the fridge so that I could train that as well. Anyway, my next life hack is Blob Opera. So this is a digital one, and it's very, very highbrow. Google have made a series of AI projects. And Blob Opera is an AI opera thing. There's 5 blobs, and they've all got faces. And each one is like tenor and soprano and bass and whatever. And depending on how you move the mouse or your finger, or if you're doing it on your phone, they do different harmonies and different... and you can actually produce some really beautiful blob operas. So... if you're listening, search for Blob Opera on Google, have a play around, and say goodbye to your evening, because you'll be
so it's
on
to
it
make
for a while.
Music. You produce the music.
Yeah, and you can record them, send them to friends.
Can you see popular ones that other people have done?
I think you can. I don't know how. There must be a library of them somewhere.
I've seen the videos. They're quite sort of cute characters, and they all go like...
yeah, exactly.
Like that, don't they? Yeah. Stand up straight and open their mouth. Right, so I've sent this to a bunch of different people, and I also put it in my newsletter, but it's going to go in here. Red Rising is a series by Pierce Brown, who is going to come on the podcast once he finishes writing his 6th book. But it's just every single person that I've given this fiction series to has become addicted, and it's consumed quite a lot of their life. So please take care with this life hack. I am warning you now. But Red Rising's, it's a really easy to read, very fast paced, engaging. It's, I guess it would technically probably fall under sci-fi, but there's a lot of sort of history references in there. And it's just to do with politics and backstabbing. And there's this guy rising up through the ranks and he's infiltrating different societies. But the whole world, very similar to the Harry Potter thing, the whole world feels quite encompassing. Red Rising, go and read it. And the first one is sick, and then there's 5 in the series that you can get stuck into if you enjoy it. So highly recommended.
Nice. Is it me?
Go away.
So you probably heard one of the tips is turn all notifications off, which you mentioned before. Like, I think you should have most, if not all, notifications off. The problem I found with that, I don't know whether you two, I think Yusuf changed to what I'm about to say. I don't know what you do with this, Chris, but when I did that, I was like, right, it's full blackout. Like, I don't want anything. I don't want the badge notifications. I don't want the noises. I don't want anything. And what that actually started to create was a worse version of the, like, app spiral of you'll go on your phone, you, like, look at your email. Like, all right, there's no new email, so thank God for that. I wonder if there's any WhatsApp, so I'll have a look in WhatsApp. And then before you know, you're back at email again. And basically turning notifications off, all that does is creates, well, I need to go and check when there's something new. Because there's no other way of knowing. So basically, turning all notifications off but leaving the red badge on allows you to relax a bit, because you can see, I know it's like you can see it accumulating, but there's no need to go in and check. And with things like iMessage, sometimes if you open iMessage and it opens on someone's message, that's then marked as unread, and you can easily forget about it. So for me, leaving the notification badge on, but it doesn't bombard me when I want to look at my phone. I'm like, okay, I've got some emails, got some WhatsApp, got some iMessages. I can't respond now, but I'll look at them later, for example. So I'm terrible with replying to things. Pretty much everyone who knows me knows that I'm terrible at replying to things. And I think this has contributed to that over time. I think not having the badge on, not having any way of knowing there's unprocessed stuff in that app means that, like, it's easy to forget. So that's really helped me recently.
Yeah, I had notifications turned off fully for WhatsApp for a while, and I've sent and received millions of WhatsApp messages over the last few years. For me, I still keep badges off. I've been through the valley of despair that you went through, and now, because I like to use the web app for WhatsApp, I like to use iMessage on my desktop, and I don't ever have emails that are urgent. Not anymore. Right. You guys may, but nothing that I ever receive, if it's urgent, they'll ring me. And if it's not, I'll check in when I check in, and I'll check in on my laptop. So I think it's a really good point, and it's one that I do agree with, but I think I've found a technique that works slightly better for me for where I'm at the moment.
I think you're even further through the evolution by the sounds of things.
I mean, Chris's global WhatsApp analytics for total number of messages sent and received makes me want to throw up.
It's actually,
you get invited to like the WhatsApp annual conference of like heaviest users.
Yeah. It's in like the teraflops of.
Oh, here's a thing that I learned. The entire internet, in terms of the electrons that make up the data, not the storage devices that they're on, but the electrons that make up the data, is smaller than an orange.
Is that if you push them all together and there's no space between?
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that piece of information, Chris.
Also, if you were to write out on double-sided A4 paper all of the information that is generated by the internet every day and then stack them up in a single stack, they'd go from here to the sun and back four times.
Daily. Yeah. I suppose it depends on how big your handwriting is, doesn't it? But either way, you get into the sun.
Yeah. It's an effort. Seth, what you got?
I may have mentioned this before, but upgrade to the maximum internet that your location allows. Just like for the sake of an extra £20 or something, to have the fastest internet, like just think of the amount of time that saves overall. Like all these little, all these little bits of time waiting for something to buffer or waiting for a page to load, and if that's just eliminated, like you. So this was actually from George McGill when he was just saying you should always pay for more speed, because if you can eliminate friction for stuff, then amazing. And now we're going to hit a point soon where this is no longer applicable for most humans, because then we'd be limited by the person. I think me and Johnny have talked about this in terms of using Alfred or using software that makes you really fast at something, when actually now it's your brain that's the slow thing, which is great. Like we want things to move in that direction, but that's why like the M1 MacBook Pro, it's fast, it's good. And if you're a power user of Mac, then you will get the full use out of it. But for a lot of people, like, if you ever use the trackpad to like go to the address bar and then type google.com and then scroll with it, like just don't bother with any of this stuff. Like get a Chromebook until you can max that out. So I think the whole moral of that story is like whatever technology you use, squeeze the lemon of it and then say, right, I've earned the right to upgrade to the next level of speed. Just making sure that you're never bottlenecked by the technology.
So the bottlenecking is the big thing, because it's like so I have this conversation with people who think that Macs are worse than PCs, and they'll say like, oh, well, I've built my own PC and I've got more RAM than you have, and I spent half the money. It's like that's a valid argument until you have to restart your computer once, because the app
blue screen of death.
Like, yeah, the Microsoft Office crashed or it doesn't work. And it's the same with internet. Like, yeah, you save £20 a month, and that might be, you know, great across a year, But if you have to deal with like a day on the every day, a video that buffers for a minute, think how long that accumulates. It's like the whenever you bottleneck by something regularly, it is usually worth just paying to remove the problem. And then you just never realize.
It's an emotional thing. Like I tweeted the other day saying, like, does anyone have a legitimate reason for having a PC over a Mac? And all the answers were like, oh, well, if I want to change the graphics card on this thing, I will. Okay. But like,
they're all special use cases.
Yeah. Yeah.
If anyone does have a legitimate reason for using a Windows operating system computer over a MacBook, please leave it in the comments below. I'm more than happy to have my mind changed about this, but every use case is specific. Like yeah. It just Windows computers just don't work the same way as Macs
have
do.
To use both. Like day to day, I probably use a Windows computer more in total hours than
the NHS,
than Mac. And there's just no comparison. I mean, in fairness, I'm using like Windows 98 or something. Vista. So
yeah.
The reasons are always like, oh, I use this bit of like stock trading software and it only works. Okay. Specific case.
Fucking
like
MT4.
We're talking about general
phone,
oh, general day to day use of just using a computer.
Well the solution is you give two people 8 hours and a different device and you say, right, you've got this you've got this section of work to do. Off
see
you go.
Who gets it done quick.
See who
fucking hell. Yeah, it's not even. So this actually relates to the people who are on MacBook. Yusuf told me about this when I first got my Mac, I think, or when you first maybe Alfreded me. By pressing Control, Command, and Space, you bring up an emoji keyboard, and you can select them from there. Now, Seth has gone one step further and put an Alfred emoji shortcut in, which means that he can do it directly from his Alfred dashboard, but presuming that you don't want to go that deep. And I, even though I'm an avid Alfred user, I still use Control Command Space. A lot of the time, I think, because I don't actually know quite the emoji that I need. I'm like, oh, this is an emoji that space.
It looks like a bolt, but is it electric or is it?
Not even that. I want inspo. I want emoji inspo. So I'll have a little look. I'm like, should it be an apple? Should it be an orange? Oh, is that a croissant? Like, do you know what I mean? I just want to have a... Is that a potato?
There is a potato. I think there's a sweet potato now as well.
There is, yeah, yeah, exactly. This is technically a sweet potato, by the way, as well. So, sorry about that.
Yeah, fair enough. I think if you want to browse the emojis, there's another app actually that does that, but slightly quicker, called Rocket for Mac. That's like $3, which is worth it. It's very similar to the Command Space control, just slightly more nicer interface.
Interesting. Should we leave it there, gents? I think we got some in the tank still for moving forward. That was really good. I've written. Yeah, it was awesome. I've written everything in the show notes below. If you want to go and check them out, I will find some links for a waterproof paper and pencil and a miniature taser where I can. If there are any discount codes that I've managed to find as well, I'll throw them in too. If you enjoyed it, if you've got your own life hacks, just put them in the comments or DM me at ChrisWillX wherever you follow me. Where should people go if they want to check out more of your stuff, boys?
Two places. If you're thinking like, ooh, online coaching. Those guys do online coaching. Their life looks so appealing. propanefitness.com/modernwisdom. If you just want some macros for free, then propanefitness.com and use the calculator on the main page.
And a new URL, if you're just thinking about starting an online business or you want to learn a little bit more about how to go online, propanefitness.com/MW business.
You got it right.
I did.
You got it right. Yes, indeed.
I love it. Gentlemen, thank you for this. We will come back. We will do more life hacks soon. It is a pleasure.